the delegations from the department and the entities. The stage two of the presentation. Those who are going to present it today, we like your presentations and we appreciate them. But sometimes I feel you make your work very difficult. We know what is your vision, what is your mission, what is the mandate. We are dealing with the APPs. With the strategic plans as well as the budget. In one oversight, we once went to a place, all what in that mining company did was to tell us how much good work they were doing. Now, forgetting that they needed to tell us what is it that they think we can help them. Yes, we want to see that you're doing a good work, but we are also interested to know what are the challenges. What case are you pleading? So that the community can understand what challenges are you faced with. I'm not saying but it was very interesting that most of the people who were presenting didn't even start with a, you see, if you start with a preamble, you must start with a protesting preamble. All of them seem to be very comfortable with what they are given. But I'm not saying today those who are going to start must start to complain about what they are given. But if you don't don't expect us to go back and say this is something that we protect. Now, Honorable Schmidt, don't take this what I'm going to say and use it somewhere else. Frankly speaking, I get worried. It's not my terrain for now. I get worried because when people perform good, we don't get to reflect that we are doing good. I can't understand. I'm told one company, one of the entities, is almost completely sinking. We continue to put bailouts and so forth and so forth. I wonder what will happen if you perform badly. We don't have a rewarding system. It seems the more you perform better, the more you get less allocations. And those who perform badly is the more they get extra allocation. I won't mention the names. So this notion of entities of the state not performing well, unfortunately, doesn't seem to be the case here. There is one I won't mention that I was told is under energy. Is almost at the brink of liquidation. Others have gone even beyond an overdraft. So I'm just saying at a broad level, it's a broad political discussion that at some point, regardless where do you fall, we have to deal with. So that you don't have a situation where people, because they do well, you must get paraded and say, yeah, you did well, and then the next thing, you get a 10% cut on your budget for doing well. So you'll end up not doing anything. I'm not trying to discourage you to say, until you get rewarded, you do the best job, continue to do it. But I think from our side, as politicians or political activists, whatever category you put yourself in, is a discussion we should have. So I'm just leaving that to say you are doing well, but I'm worried the day you start not to do well, what will happen. Today, with the powers vested in me, I never said you are going to be the first one. But I can see your sitting arrangement is influence based. And because no can you call Kulama daughter, I've got an entitlement to put you all in. You see, you are doing exactly what the council did. Where were the others? Sizobona ukuthi are they making any influence okanye decoration? We want women to be at the point of influence. As funny itrojin abantu abaphelezele amadoda. You see? But this will take it with it's just a good start to expose them. Next time they will be taking decisions with you. Good. We will have the Council for Geoscience. And then this time around we'll have Ubabum Sweet and Eti Balake, the Mintech. And then we will then have a regulator and the trader. We'll deal with the regulator almost simultaneously with the regulator together with the trader. Nina and Fanny Mintech the Council for Geoscience. Down the line, we're still going to talk. I'm going to show you the buttons on the list. But down the line, we'll have another broader discussion whether you can have a state diamond trader, the regulator, and I'm told down the line, the state mining company might at some point fall under the DMR. I'm looking forward to that day to see them presenting differently from what you are doing. But it's another day that is a day of waiting. And then hopefully we'll be done. So if we again finish at 4:30 like yesterday, it is not because of these members. We are quite ready to work. We are subject to you. Okay. Babumad. The time is yours. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Chair of the Committee, honorable members of the Committee, fellow officials of the Department of Mineral Resources, fellow board members and executives of state-owned entities here present, ladies and gentlemen, may I start by conveying the CGS's condolences to the Honorable Chair on the passing on of your aunt, and may I also convey our sincerest condolences to the Mandela family the passing of Mamuini, Madikizela Mandela, and pray to God that he will give the family strength and support them during these tragic times. Honorable Chair and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, I bring you warm greetings from the CGS, and thank you for visiting the CGS and our Donkerhoek core facility on the 30th of January 2018. I hope the visit was informative to the honorable committee members, and it gave you the perspective on the mandate of the CGS and how the CGS is executing and implementing the mandate as a science council. My name is Mbendeni Humphrey Mate, and I'm profoundly honored to introduce the delegation of the Council for Geoscience in my capacity as the chairman of the board of CGS. My delegation is technically supported by, on my left, Mr. Kolisam Vinjelwa, who's the board member. He also serves on the technical committee and on the PRTC committee, the committee that looks after employees. On his left is the CEO, Mr. Mabuza, and his executive team comprises the CFO, Mr. Matripe, to his left, Mr. Christo Crail, who is the acting executive of the Applied Sciences, and to the left of Mr. Crail is Ms. Refilwe Shelembe, who is the acting executive geological services, and we are also accompanied by the acting head of strategy, Ms. Valerie Numalo. Can you stand up, ma'am, so that they can see you? And also accompanied by the head of by the company secretary, Ms. Silen Numalo. Thanks, ma'am. Let me hasten, honorable chair, to request the committee not to view the CGS as Hollywood because of the number of acting positions I have outlined above. The board gave the CEO an opportunity to develop the internal promising associates on the functioning of the CGS, and please note that there have been no expectations created to the associates that are acting. The deadline to the filling in of these positions with permanent incumbents is the end of June 2018. The HR department has already advertised the positions, and the organization is going through a recruitment, selection, and hopefully filling in of these positions. As the committee may recall, I previously took the committee through the operational challenges that the CGS experienced in 2016 and the first part of 2017. We are now stabilizing, and this is supported by the fact that the morale at the CGS is very high, and this is reflected in the internal performance of the organization, having exceeded 80% completion of all assigned projects. Furthermore, the employee satisfaction survey that was recently conducted showed an 87% employee satisfaction. We are extremely proud of this. There's a strong contingent of about 400 plus men and women staff members, I call them associates, behind this delegation, who have dedicated their professional lives and integrity to serving the council and by extension the people of South Africa in fulfilling the CGS mandate. I thank them for their dedication. Of particular interest, Chair, the CGS board and management pride themselves on the training and development opportunities they provide to our CGS associates. This year, we've had 8 associates that have been awarded their MSc degrees and 4 associates who have been awarded their PhD degrees. We look forward to mentoring and molding these associates to become the next leaders of the CGS and SA Incorporated. Therefore, to expose our associates to the functioning and processes of the oversight and accountability role played by the PPC on mineral resources. Our delegation is joined by two of the four PhD graduates, Dr. Emmanuel Sakala, stand up, sir, and Dr. Takani Ntobi, who's just next to me. The other two associates, Dr. Taufik Dansey and Dr. Nigel Hicks, could not join us because they are graduating today, Chair. Just to give you a flavor of the studies that these associates are doing, Dr. Sakala completed his PhD on the development of rapid assessment tools for groundwater vulnerability mapping using integrated geoscientific data sets and artificial intelligence algorithms. And he did a case study from the Witbank and Emelo coalfields of South Africa. And the short dynamite that we have here completed her degree on a technical and economic evaluation of a passive underground mine water purification system of pumps, a geothermally powered geoengineering system designed for in-situ remediation of acid mine water. Chair, just to give you a few highlights on the CGS, and I'll be very brief and hand over to Mr. Mabuza. The greatest and recent highlight of the CGS was the drilling of two boreholes in the Beaufort West area during the shale gas project. These two boreholes, borehole BW02 and BW04, returned high water yields of 8 liters per second and 5 liters per second, respectively. This water was intersected at depths below 165 meters, and the combined yield of the two boreholes is about 33 million liters per month of potable water. Because of the water crisis in the Western Cape, and particularly at Beaufort West, the DMR and CGS donated these boreholes to the Beaufort West municipality and the greater 45,000 strong community of the area on the 13th of February 2018. And a plaque to this effect was unveiled by the DG of DMR, Advocate Thabo Mokoena, and the then Mayor of Beaufort West, Councillor van der Linde of the Democratic Alliance. Going further, Chair, on the auditing side, the CGS maintained an unqualified audit track record for the past 16 years, and we are hoping to achieve a clean audit in the 2017-2018 financial year. We are encouraged by the signals of recovery in the mineral prices. Consequently, every effort must be placed to ensure that we do not miss the next phase of the commodities boom. This is about identifying and discovering sizable mineral deposits, especially in rural areas, with the aim of job creation, which is very critical in the South African context. Honorable ladies of the committee, once again, I wish to emphasize the importance of geology to human development broadly, spanning not only minerals development, but contribution towards, inter alia, infrastructure development, agriculture and food security, medical geology, groundwater, engineering geology, and geohazards identification. These geosciences fall under the ambit of the Council for Geoscience. Our mandate is well inscribed in our founding legislation as amended. Key amongst the aspects of our mandate is our approach to the critical multidisciplinary geological mapping program that I described in detail in my last briefing to the committee. The benefit of undertaking such an integrated and multidisciplinary approach to conducting our research was evident during the Council for Geosciences Environmental Baseline Investigations being conducted in the Southern Karoo, near the town of Beaufort West, and the resultant boreholes that were provided to the municipality to alleviate the water shortage crisis. The multidisciplinary and integrated geoscience program will also look at new and more innovative ways to resolve real-world problems and to develop novel solutions to address national imperatives. The Council for Geoscience is looking at innovative ways to continue towards diversifying the energy mix of South Africa and moving away from the current heavy reliance on coal. And I've just given an example of the young lady who's doing good work on geothermal energy. This includes leading research on geothermal energy in South Africa, investigating the shale gas potential of Lower Karoo strata, and reducing the carbon footprint of South Africa by researching mechanisms of sequestrating carbon dioxide. We will also look at employing new technologies and applications towards resolving real-world problems. Some of these technologies and applications include applying principles of artificial intelligence for the identification and characterization of natural systems, such as groundwater controls and natural hazards, and gathering and using high-resolution surveying techniques such as hyperspectral satellites, satellite imagery, LIDAR, drones, and subsurface surveying techniques such as magnetotelluride and high-density seismic array modeling. The Council for Geoscience is also looking at upgrading the laboratory facilities and acquiring new analytical equipment that will further assist in attaining multidisciplinary data. The CGS is also involved in several projects that we deem to be of strategic significance to our society, some of which will be emphasized in the presentation to follow. These include, albeit not limited to, geoenvironmental studies for the development of shale gas in the Karoo Basin, rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines, assessment of uranium and thorium resources, strategic mine water management, high-resolution mapping exercises, offshore mapping stream that is supportive of the oceans Pakisa, and the Blue Economy Development Program, to mention just a few. Over and above improving the completion of projects, the Council for Geoscience is also focusing on ensuring that all projects are completed with the highest quality and care. This is especially important because it is imperative that the organization delivers efficient and effective geoscientific solutions to address the National Development Plan of South Africa. The Council for Geoscience will also pursue collaborative partnerships with other local and international research institutes. These kinds of partnerships are important for the skills development and for better execution of the mandate. One such partnership seeks to monitor shallow and deep mine seismicity and it involves the Council for Geoscience, the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, MINTEC, and the Mine Health and Safety Council. This is an imperative requirement as continued and deep mining significantly increases the risks of human life and surrounding infrastructure. Therefore, the coming financial year promises an exciting year as the Council for Geoscience embarks on a highly challenging and demanding program. It is fitting that the CGS family commits a further comprehensive program this year when the people of South Africa have declared it a centenary commemoration of our founding father of democracy, Dr. Nelson Mandela. Our program is designed to resonate with the values of inter alia building a non-racial, non-sexist, and prosperous nation. We accordingly emphasize on the criticality of geosciences' response to societal challenges primarily. Just to give some lowlights, Chair, honorable committee members, allow me to mention two lowlights in the CGS. On the 1st March 2018, Mr. Elvis Rapadu, an associated CGS, passed on after being in a coma following a car accident. We've also been saddened by the loss of family members of several of our associates, and may their souls rest in peace. I thank you and hand over to the CEO and his team to present the details. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mayor. Good morning, Chair, honorable members, colleagues and guests. I am the spokesperson of a strong CGM family, supported by the board as led by Dr. Martin. Today, I will run through the presentation with particular focus on our APP as well as financing. And we'll share with you some of the successes that we have experienced and the plans that we envisage require necessary investment for us to change the economic landscape of South Africa henceforth. The CFO will assist me on the finance part. Our joint presentation is a representation of the work of the CGS family at large. Our mandate is in the Act, so I will not go through it. I do, however, Chair, would like your permission to just pause and look at this vision, because the APP will deliver us here where we want to contribute. Delivering a prosperous and transformed society that is enabled by geoscience solutions. We have already started on this journey. Dr. Maate, my chairperson, has shared with you what we have contributed to the community of Bedford West. We would like to see many more examples of that kind of success in terms of the work that we do. Our mission emphasizes and in the main enunciates and elaborates on our founding mandate, so I will not touch too much on that. We are a values-based organization. We abbreviate our values and ideals, and in the main, there are six attributes of our values. As a science council, at the pinnacle of our values is innovation. We embrace diversity. We are driven by excellence in what we do. We are here to account. We are accountable to the people of South Africa. We are a continuously learning organization, and we provide services to our people. Next slide is, it gives a sense of the structure of the organization. And I think Dr. Maate has already alluded to the envisaged stability that, further stability that we see in the next 2 months at best. Our strategic focus areas are broken into 5 strategic objectives. The first one is delivery of our mandate, which is delivering an integrated, thematic and systematic mapping and research. The other is about playing an advisory, stakeholder engagement, as well as knowledge management. The third objective of being an empowered, transformed, motivated, and capacitated workforce. The organizational efficacy links with building of capable state institutions. And of course, at the core of all of this is financial sustainability and stewardship. We've already framed the outcome out of the 5 objectives that we outlined. We are about generating geoscience information and solutions that will enable prosperity for all in line with our vision. In this light, honorable members, I will not spend too much time other than to show that our strategic plan already links and draws from the aspirations of the National Development Plan, the DMR goals, and it is cascaded to define the strategic objectives of the organization that I have just outlined, as well as translated into the corporate scorecard that is a dashboard for us that gives us a sense of how we are performing against the commitments that we have made. Our integrated multidisciplinary geoscience mapping program, the idea is to show the importance of this 150,000 scale integrated map. This only shows the geology part, and what we are trying to convey is, as you move from the picture in your left, it is a scale of 1 in a million. You get a sense of what the geology is. As you move to the middle, it's a scale of 1 in 250,000. You begin to see more details and clarity of what is there. And as you move to the extreme right, at this scale that we are targeting of 1 in 50,000, there would be a significant clarity of the geology of this country, so that we can begin to make informed decisions about our country and how we develop it going forward. Just to appreciate where we are currently, the 1 in a million scale, as well as 1 in 250,000 scale maps, we have covered the country 100% with those two, keeping in mind the quality as you improve to the right. However, for the 1 in 50,000 scale, we have only covered below 5% of the country. It is on this basis that we have put this program, a comprehensive program, to cover the whole country at a scale of 1 in 50,000. We have looked at the nations that are able to do more with geological information. And if we are just to take three, one in Africa next door, Namibia, Canada, as well as Australia, they are all mapped at 1 in 50,000. And when you look at their global share of the exploration budget, the three of them account for approximately 40% of the exploration budget. Exploration activity is attracted by availability of geological information. And currently, geological information that is required by explorationists is at a scale of 1 in 50,000. In South Africa, we only have less than 5% of that, which begins to explain this disconnect between the exploration activity and successes for exploration that secures the future of mining and the lack of investment in the country that we see, particularly for replenishing future mines. In respect of our airborne surveys, 30% of high-resolution geophysics coverage, as well as 23% of soil geochemistry coverage. You can begin to appreciate the disconnect between the various percentages of coverage, and so with the integration, we want to streamline the coverage for all of these various geoscience tools and techniques that we apply. The geotechnical maps, these generally mimic the areas that have dolomitic terrains, and there too we have less than 5% of geotechnical maps coverage in the country. And it is important with our increasing infrastructure build program that we have an appreciation of the geotechnical maps, so that the infrastructure that we install can be bequeathed to posterity. Honorable members, this is the approach we have taken of the geo, our integrated multidisciplinary geoscience mapping model. With the ND programs are national development imperatives. So we have taken these four imperatives. Firstly, the economic growth imperatives. What is our contribution towards that? Secondly, the environment and health. The third one is the national development plan imperative on innovation. And the last one is international relations. That helped us to define the themes within the geosciences, the Council for Geoscience. So the first one, we look at geosciences for minerals and energy resources, upstream petroleum development, for instance. We look at geosciences for infrastructure and land use. We look at geoscience innovation, as well as what we call geoscience diplomacy. And below that are a little bit more details of the sub-themes that, so you can see the correlation from the National Development Plan into our broader theme, and we get into more details of the work that we do at the Council for Geoscience, and beneath that, we get to a level of project definition that supports and can be linked all the way back to how it contributes towards the various National Development Plan imperatives. This defines the areas that we are targeting starting from this financial year. You will notice we have a big block that transcends both the Northern Cape Province as well as the Northwest Province. In the main, the areas that are shaded in gray are those areas that have been declared poverty loans. And it is our intention to begin to get into those areas and study the geology in an integrated manner. We don't know what is going to come out until we have done the necessary research, and we are hopeful that in all of those areas that we have targeted for this integrated multidisciplinary geoscience program, that we would be able to turn those gray areas into normal and not poverty zones anymore as part of our contribution using geosciences for human development. We have also targeted a large block in the far Eastern Cape that transcends into the marine geology. You can see, obviously, we can't do everything all at the same time, but there is a large part of this gray area, which is the poverty node, and we hope, we have been told that there are no minerals of economic significance in the Eastern Cape, but we have not tested this with the geology. So why not get in there, do the mapping, and then once we have the results, we can begin to say, can we confirm that indeed the mineralization in this part of the world makes sense or not. We have several smaller blocks in the Western Cape, right in the middle of the gray area. We have fewer, more smaller blocks to the far western part of the Western Cape. And you can see we have a block offshore as part of our marine and blue economy program. We have a block further up in Limpopo that covers the Bushveld Igneous Complex, and we also have a block in Mpumalanga to the right that covers Bushbuck Ridge and Giani areas, and further south in the Free State in the Malutia Pofung area, as well as KZN in the Tugela terrain. So these are the areas that we would be dispatching our scientific expertise to from this financial year to go and do various layers of geological tests and assessments and so on, and see how we can optimize our knowledge of geosciences to begin to contribute to some of those societal challenges that we have alluded to. We have listed here, and I will not touch on all of them, some of the benefits that we anticipate will arise out of this work. For a long time, South Africa found the Wits Gold Basin and Dr. Merensky discovered a Bushveld Igneous Complex, and we began to relax. These are the two well-defined mineralizing systems that we know in this country. We have not found other major mineralization systems. We have not delineated them. And we believe that with the use of geology, particularly identifying the emerging minerals of strategic importance to development globally, such as the battery minerals, for instance, there's absolutely no reason why we cannot, for instance, begin to look at whether we have cobalt in this country. Everybody believes that cobalt is only found in the DRC, but we have not looked at it here. How much lithium do we have and other rare earth elements and so on and so forth. So as part of investing today for the shift in future mineral development, it is important that we invest in the geosciences today to secure the future that we see. I've already alluded to the correlation between geoscience knowledge as well as attraction of investment in both mineral and upstream petroleum development. It is our view that geology can be used to catalyze junior mining activities in the country. We must use geology to improve the ocean governance and data management. We can contribute to sustained food security. We want to improve predictive capability of geohazards such as sinkholes, landslides, earthquakes, and so on. And it is in this area that we are looking at greater applications of artificial intelligence. You heard earlier that we have a doctor who studied in artificial intelligence. We are building more capacity and collaboration in that space. We can improve in our infrastructure and spatial planning, and land use, safer water and environment for communities, as well as other socio-economic development and rural upliftment. These are some of the projects that we believe are of national importance. I won't list them, and I'll just go through some of those projects. This here is a map. This is the near shore geoscience mapping. Our knowledge of marine geosciences is still lagging significantly behind. What we have done here is to demonstrate the depth of the bay from the beach as you go in, and we've identified the Robben Island, and we think that those who are in Robben Island, if they had the benefit of this map, they could have predicted an exit route, because that in red is less than 15 meters in depth, although it's a little bit longer, but they did not have that benefit. But you can do all sorts of things. I mean, you can use this to plan how the ships and the boats go around and appreciate the geology as part of the broader governance. That was on the lighter note. We have established a seismic network. We have a national seismic network, and we are monitoring it constantly. These are the various stations where we have the networks. So at the macro scale, as well as regional and international network that we are able to connect into and work with the global community of seismologists. But more importantly is that for the localized cluster around deep gold mines, we have worked in collaboration with the Mine Health and Safety Council to install a greater intensity of the seismic stations. We have acquired quite a lot of data over the years using those seismic stations. We have recently come together with the Mine Health and Safety Council, MIPTEC, CSIR, ourselves, and we are looking at all of us doing different things that relate to seismicity and fatalities in the fatalities that arise from the seismic activities. And we believe that with this collaboration that is streamlined, utilizing all the resources that we have and extending that to the universities and other research capabilities, we should be able to come up with an instrument that we can use to significantly improve our ability to predict. Again, these are areas that we are going to apply artificial intelligence with the huge data sets that we have. The Department of Science and Technology has affirmed that it will avail other two postdoc graduates who specialize exclusively in artificial intelligence. They will be working with our youngsters use this data and see where it takes us. It is a worthy research initiative that we need to look at and see how far it will take us. We are also involved in the management of derelict and odorless mines. We assess, characterize, and where possible, seal and rehabilitate derelict and odorless mines in the country in partnership with a number of colleagues, amongst whom are Mine Health and Safety Council. We also work with MINTEC and other institutions in trying to minimize the risks that are associated with these derelict and odorless mines. We're involved in strategic water management projects, particularly in respect of development and implementation of interventions to control and manage such risks associated with mining activities as acid mine water as we know it today. In the Karoo deep drilling and environmental baseline, our focus area for this study is really on ensuring that we have the scientific basis, the scientific baseline. So we have drilled this is a 5-year baseline study that assesses the potential geoenvironmental impact that will be associated with the exploitation and development of shale gas, hopefully in the near future. So far, we have drilled 5 boreholes of up to 165 meters. The water has been tested. 2 of these boreholes are the ones that the chairman alluded to in his introductory remarks that were handed over to the people of Beaufort West. In the current year, financial year, we'll be drilling 2 deeper boreholes up to 750 meters. The community and the people of South Africa are genuinely concerned about the possible environmental risks that is associated with the exploitation of shale gas, as it were. So in terms of profiling the shallow water, we are fairly confident in that area that the 5 boreholes that we have drilled have provided us with a sufficient confidence. So we're going a little bit deeper to 750 meters so that we can profile the geo-environmental hazard or likelihood thereof at those kinds of depths. It is therefore after that that we intend to drill a much deeper stratigraphic boreholes that will be between 3.5 to 4 kilometers, and it is our intention to start drilling that borehole in the current financial year. It will help us to appreciate the geology so that we can understand the geological factors that affect the and characterize the mineralization of shale gas amongst others, as it were. These are the boreholes that were handed over by Dr. Mate, my chairman, the Director General of DMR, Advocate Mukwena, as well as the then Councillor of the Beaufort West Municipality, Mr. Van der Linde. To your right, you can see the veracity of the water as it was discovered by the geoscience geologists and technicians who were working on the ground at the time. This is, together with the other borehole, together they're able to provide and avail the 33 million liters of water per month as it was reported. On the carbon capture and storage, ours is to do the geological profiling and identifying areas where carbon can be safely stored in South Africa. Those black dots on the map, they give an indication of the geological potential storage areas where carbon can be sequestrated fairly safely. There is a lot of work that needs to be done to make absolutely sure that if and once an area is signed off and approved geologically as a safe storage area, that indeed it can qualify as such. And we are focusing our energy at the moment on the Zululand Basin, and this is work that we are doing in partnership with SANEDI, an institution established under the Department of Energy. We have published this atlas, and we are doing more work on the Zululand Basin to obtain a better understanding in terms of profiling the potential of these storage areas. South Africa's geology is really exciting. Our young geologists have produced a preliminary geothermal map of the country. And this begins to give us a sense of the geothermal energy production potential. This is only preliminary. The areas in deep red are the hotspots. These are areas where, but of course we must define and do a little bit more work to better define these areas and gain an understanding of this potential. These are not hot springs. This is deep geology potential, a geothermal potential from depths of around 100 kilometers or even long deeper. But we will have to better gain an understanding of this potential, and it is our intention to be beginning this year to place a bit more effort in profiling these various areas so that we can advise the state and the people of South Africa appropriately about what they have at their disposal and the choices that South Africa can make in defining its energy basket and its energy solution going forward. On our geoscience diplomacy program, the Council for Geoscience is the secretariat, is playing a role of the secretariat of the Organization of African Geological Surveys. It brings together all African geological surveys under one umbrella, from all member countries of the African Union. And it is an area, of course, that we can contribute in empowering the geological surveys to be able to do their own work and uplift their own countries through geosciences. We're involved in collaborative projects in a number of countries in the continent. We are exploring prospects of collaboration in other parts of the continent to enhance and maximize the value. We are actively effecting a strategic partnership with our Canadian counterpart, the Geological Survey of Canada. We sent six of our geologists on a technical visit to Canada last year. The year before that, the Canadians sent their experts to South Africa. Our geology, our geological settings are fairly similar, and the scientists are excited about this collaboration to the extent that we can learn from one another. We are strengthening our collaboration with the USGS, the United States Geological Survey. We are collaborating with the Japanese and the Germans, particularly on seismological studies, and they will be part of our seismicity program that seeks to understand the effect of seismicity around mines and the effect it has on fatalities, as it were. We are also a member of a number of international geoscience structures, and our purpose is to enhance the body of knowledge of geosciences, particularly for the country. In terms of our balanced scorecard, this is the APP, as it were. These are the five strategic objectives / perspectives that I alluded to earlier, and we go through each and every one of them in respect of how we are planning and what we are planning to do in the next 3 years. I would not go into the numbers for this presentation, other than to give an indication that these numbers are translating the previous slides and committing them now into quantifiable deliverables in various shape and form that we as an institution commit as what we will deliver in the current year, and we'll see how it progresses into the next outer years. I hand over to the CFO to take us through the finances.
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues from the GMAC family. I want to say that all this good work cannot happen without the appropriate financial support and investment. The CGS, on the first slide, let's move on to the first slide on the budget. The CGS derives its funding mainly from the fiscus. 95% there, that is. 5% comes from collaborative or commercial activities. In the next 3 years, we'll be receiving a total sum of 414 million. We'll be actually generating revenue to the amount of 414 million, 526 million the year after, and 556 million thereafter. Analyze that to a bit further. There's a baseline that is meant for to sustain the CGS operation, and there's ring-fenced funding, which is conditional grant that is project specific, and it's together with project term specific. That I emphasize term specific. And then there is the commercial revenue, as I said, 5%, and the little bit there that is interest that we generate from investing those funds as we have them. Can move to the next slide. Being a science institution, the CGS mainly pays brains, that is the personnel costs are the major operating costs. You can see that there's 226 in this year. We plan to, it's going to increase by 244. On average, we budgeted at 67% year-on-year increase. We also have budgets for our pipeline where we are training our personnel, it being the main engine of the CGS. We increasing it 10% per annum. That's funding for bursaries, both for staff, but that is meant for external bursaries, for students outside the CGS. The commercial cost to make money, obviously one has to invest a bit. That is correlating to the amounts that we intend to make on the commercial side. The operating cost, that's the annual technical program and the running of the CGS, all those facilities that have been mentioned, cautious and less than all that, their running costs are encapsulated in that line that says overhead and operating costs. That's the next highest operating cost. When you take the initial sum of income and you subtract in the operating cost, there's a little bit of surplus there that we plan to make, with which we're going to, next slide, invest in capital expenditure. We've got vehicles that the scientists need to go to the field. This is for replacements of some of the vehicles and aircraft components as they age. There's equipment such as your laptops and all the scientific gadgets that are minor, that we classify them as minor, that the scientists use, as well as major scientific equipment that we plan to buy. We've been lucky. We had a funding from the MTL process wherein we are recapitalizing the lab and also the creating space for geotechnical lab. Move on. Now, there is this cuts that are unpleasant, but because of the constraint of the fiscus, we are also not exposed to them. National Treasury has cut, transferred infrastructure transfer back 36 billion, and in this current year, I mean the past year, and then in the next 3 years, it intends to cut 7 and 13 and 14 and so forth in the future, and that is cut on the baseline. The baseline that is that core funding that is supposed to sustain the CGS. The new baseline now is reduced, as I'm saying, to the figures that are reflected there on the of 177 and 199 and 205 million, respectively. Move on to the next one. Now, to look a bit better into the funding, as I said, the operational budget, there isn't much growth on the operational budget. That is the baseline funding. It only grows inflation related. With the cuts, it's even less. So it's actually not a growth, it's a decrease, not an increase, because they doesn't cater for all the inflation cost part of it. Then we've got funding that is meant for rehabilitation of, which is very, it has increased significantly. It goes 6% every year. There's real work that is being done there on the rehabilitation of the lift and on his mine. The other project finding that is the next in the line, that's the mine water management project. As well, there's on all those three projects, Karoo doing this, 26 and 27, as you can see in this current year, 20, goes to 27 and 29 million in the following year and so forth. It represents about 6% growth. That's the quantum that is being granted to us to do the work is at least kept constant, it's not decreasing. We are also blessed to have secured, with the support of this committee, 90 million to actually be able to carry out our mandate. There was work that was in the act that we couldn't do. Now we've been given 90 million to cater for that. That is mainly servers and all the mechanisms that are necessary to cater for those sections of the act that we had put in abeyance. That's the 90 million. This is coming the following year. And that is the one-time funding. From there, we have to see how we maintain that with that operational budget. And then, as together with that, we've been lucky again. I say thank you members of the committee, that we have secured 386 million to do this good work that the CEO has been talking about, which is multidisciplinary and which is integrated. It shows and begins to show where we're going, that with funding, a lot can be done with geosciences. Let's move on to the next slide. Now, the challenge that we've got is at the rate of funding, the rate at which the funding comes, we have requested from the fiscals 1.8 billion, but we were granted 386 million. So there are shortfalls in our planning. Though we do have shortfalls and we understand the constraints in the fiscals, it would be good to have them not as short-term funding that is term-bound, that want us to all the time go back to National Treasury to request for funding for each year. Because then you can employ enough scientists long-term and they will grow so that they can do the work. As you've seen, 5% has been mapped at 1-50. We need the whole country mapped, and that's going to take as long if the rate of funding is low and it's not sustained. On the normal running of the Council for Geoscience, if I look at it, we are running a book such that we can meet our financial obligations. If you look at our liquidity ratio, is 2:1. We've got a steady balance sheet, which is sitting at 613 million. We intend to make 414 million in revenue, as I've already mentioned earlier on. And both the chair and we've already talked about the fact that we're managing our finances well. We don't have any qualifications, and we intend to obtain a clean audit. The next is actually that problem statement. In summary, this slide is saying, let us get permanent funding to help us plan better in the long term, because geosciences aren't a short-term project. They are, the longer you that you are sure of your future, the better you can plan and the more you can do. Move on to the next. Thank you,
Chair. Could you run through the last session of human resources? I think you have heard the chairman and you've seen in the financials our investment in the human capital development. We have a full-time students, 49 of them, that are currently registered. We have taken 34 interns that are exposed to experiential learning, and we are also in the process of taking on additional 39 interns through our partnership with the MQA. This slide in the main shows the staff profile of the CGS from executives all the way to the administrators throughout the organization. It gives us a sense of where and who the managers are in terms of our racial profile as a country, the scientific base, the technicians, as well as the professional support. In this slide, this one links back to the 94 bursaries, both internally, part-time, and the full-time bursars, who are not part of the CGN family yet, but they constitute the pipeline that is required in order to secure the long-term future for the organization. Out of the 94 bursary holders, 80 are on the MSc and PhD programs. And so our pipeline of building a solid scientific base is indeed in place, and we continue to invest in that. This is an example of the MSc qualifications that were obtained, as well as PhDs. In this picture, I only have one doctor there who's with us today, the tallest one of the group. You see that out of the 9 MSc qualifications, 6 were females and 3 were males, And of the four PhDs that Dr. Mate introduced to you, one is female and three are males. So we really are building a solid base of scientists, and we are hoping that with this integrated plan, we want to create an environment that will produce world-class, A-rated geoscientists from this base. Thank you very much. That last slide is the three roundabouts in Mpumalanga. Those three, that is the most spectacular part of our nature and geology. If we have a moment, we can go.
Thank you, Paya Tangi. I don't know what you wanted to say to Inkosi Mandela when you say some people, if they had known, they could have crossed the ocean. Now it might sound like they voluntarily decided to stay there for 27 years when there was an exit plan to think about. Okay. Who is the doctor? I never knew that there's someone who is taller than Mabuza going down. Now I can see all these things that is Dube and Mabuza who are competing about the proximity to the ground. I can see when you are there, Mabuza becomes very tall. Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. Any questions? Honorable Lorima, you know, the problem with you, Honorable Schmidt, I wouldn't know whether you are providing some legal services, and I hope you will do a declaration of interest when it is required to. Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mandel.
The first one is the most attention grabbing, although possibly not central to your work, and that is the geothermal one. I'm very interested in that. What do your initial studies show as far as our geothermal potential is concerned? I mean, how high does the potential have to be for you to get a geothermal power station? I'm going to leave that one with you for now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On a light-hearted note, as long as the three rondavels, not rondavels from Mankamla and KwaZulu-Natal. But having said that, Mr. Chair, the only question I would like to ask is, there's a positive spin on the 386 million rand granted to CGS. But my concern is, it probably relates to, and I'm not a mathematician, but it probably relates to between 2 and 3% of the 20 billion that is required. So one of the takeaway lines yesterday was the urgency to invest in the department and all its entities to ensure growth in the economy, in the mining economy. But at a rate of 2 to 3% of what is required, I'm very concerned that we will miss the boat like we missed the last economic commodity upcycle, and a few of them for the next 20 years, well, 2-3% times 30 years, I would guess, gives you 100%. So something needs to be done, and some urgency needs to be created if this is the route to ensure investment in the mining industry. Am I basically on target, or am I totally wrong?
Another mother, and you cross the ocean. sure about that. But thank you, and so I'd to thank CGS for the presentation, Honorable Chair. On slide number 8, they have the organizational structure there, and the chairperson alluded that they are not holy water. So I would like to ascertain if all those positions that are on this organizational structure are filled, and if so, and if not, the acting positions that may be there, when will they be filled? So that we have a clear undertaking from the CGS as to when those positions will be. On slide number 12, Honorable Chair, there is a 5% of the country which is published at 1 to 50,000 scale. How are we going to see growth in this space, particularly to align it to the National Development Plan? Can we perhaps say by 2030 we are wanting to see that 5% grow to 30%? So what are the targets that we are envisioning in the long run? Perhaps we go into sixth parliament, Honorable Chair, we say during the sixth parliament we want to see this grow from 5% to 20%. What is their thinking in that regard? On slide number 16, Honorable Chair, I see a lot of grey areas there that speaks to Kalahadi, Bushbuck Ridge, Maruleng, Skukune land where my mother is from, and most part of the Eastern Cape and Zululand, Central Karoo. Most of these rural areas, Honorable Chair, fall under the control and responsibility of traditional leaders. And therefore, I'd like to understand from CGS, Honorable Chair, what role, if any, do they have with the National House of Traditional Leaders, Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and Regional Houses of Traditional Leaders, in line with your strategic objective of playing an advisory role and also a stakeholder engagement and knowledge management role. So in having identified these grey areas that are in rural areas, I'd just like to understand, Honorable Chair, what is CGS doing in terms of unlocking opportunities in those areas. Then on slide number 17, Honorable Chair, we speak to sustainable food security. And one of our major challenges, and particularly in some of our oversight to Mpumalanga, we've come to see that this is quite a thorny issue, looking at agricultural land versus mining. So I'd like to understand what is CGS doing in these conflicting areas, as I've alluded, Mpumalanga, where it's threatened by mining. So my question on that would be, what are they doing to ensure that food security is actually realized and is sustainable? Slide number 19, Honorable Chair, have some projects that focus on national importance, but one that draws my attention there is seismic network monitoring. And I'd like to understand how are they using this to better utilize the seismic network monitoring to reduce fatalities in the mining industry and bring us closer to our target of zero fatalities. Slide number 22, Honorable Chair, speaks to derelict and ownerless mines, which I have continuously had problems with this because the disbelief in derelict and ownerless mines. These were mines that were operated by certain companies and at that time proved to be successful and profitable businesses. And yet today the responsibility lies with the state to revitalize instead of the previous owners. And therefore I would like to understand from CGS what is their finding in these derelict and ownerless mines, Chair, as to how many are we able to trace as to who operated these mines and how can we be able to hold those mines accountable, because some of those mines are still existing today in one form or another. They've taken a new name and they've continued to mine elsewhere in the country, yet they have abandoned these derelict and ownerless mines. Slide number 25, new groundwater uncovered in Beaufort West, 33 million liters or per month of potable water availed for drought-stricken communities. And I'd like to understand, Honorable Chair, with this discovery, what real impact have we had on society in Beaufort West? Directly to the lives of the people in those drought-stricken areas. So in terms of numbers, Mabuza, how many people in that community have you been able to bring clean and drinkable water to their houses? I mean, something I deal with every week. I move from a village of Umvezo, located in rural Eastern Cape, with no water at all. Yet we sit on the banks of Umbasha River, the third biggest river in the Eastern Cape. And every time I land in Cape Town, I'm cautioned about the water crisis of Cape Town. And it seems to be a crisis only when it pertains to urban South Africans and privileged society. But when it's in rural South Africa, where we don't have water 24 years into this nascent democracy, it's a normality for rural South Africans to live without water. So I'd like to actually gain a real understanding as to how many people are truly benefiting from this process. Honorable Chair, I think that might have been my last question for the presentation. Thank you. I'll have a second bite if I find anything else. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I'll be assisted by the team, so I'll give it a first bite. Honorable Norma, in terms of the geothermal work, we are still at the very preliminary stages of having met the area. So it is our intention to focus on to one area in this APP, in this EA, so that we can gain more information, so that we can come back and provide you with more detailed information. Hopefully by the end of this year, we'll be in a much better position to give you a fuller picture on the usefulness of geothermal prospect in South Africa. We couldn't agree more, Honorable Schmidt, that it's not only the 386 million that we were given, and I think I'll ask CFO when I'm done to perhaps elaborate a bit. It is also the structure of the 386 million. So when you're eroding the baseline and you are giving the 360 over the MTEF, it's short-term funding. You want to take the doctors that we presented to you here today so that 15 years from now, after being 15 years in the CGS or more, and they are still there, they are not employed on a contract of 3 years or 5 years, because we are worried that we may not have money in the outer years of the MTF. So it is very important for us that our baseline is sufficiently augmented, so that we can, geoscience is not a short-term business. It is a long-term business. And if the South African people want to invest in geosciences to secure their future, that future cannot be optimally secured using the capabilities that we have today, if it is funded on a on a knee-jerk reaction of sort. So, Honorable Mandela, in terms of the positions that are filled, so the ones that are being filled are the executive positions and all managers in the office of the CEO. What I have elected to do is not to employ for the executives. So I want to have the executives come in so that they can go and employ and interview and secure the managers that they will work with. And so the commitment I would make is that those that will be reporting to the executives must be filled before the end of this year, all the positions within the CGS. End of June.
The board gave you a mandate that the end of June was for your executive position.
But I'm saying below, so I'm saying end of June I would have honored what the board has given me.
There won't be a policy.
There won't be at the executive level, yes. And then we know that then they will. I think the growth on us being at 5% and how we see ourselves going forward, I will ask Mr. Crane and Ms. Shalembe to come onto that one and respond to it. On the poverty note and the relationship with traditional authority, because we are for the first time building stakeholder management capacity within the CGS, because we cannot go into any area, firstly, without engaging and building not transactional relationships, but building proper relationships with all our stakeholders, traditional authority, municipalities, the farmers, and other occupiers of land in which we need to be doing work. But what we don't want is us just coming so that we can come and take a sample and go away. We want to build that relationship to be long term, so that we come, you allow us to do the samples, we process, we come back and say, here is the information that we have generated, and here is what we believe you can do with this information to better the lives as the chief of an area going forward as part of our advisory activities. And indeed, where there are opportunities to be unlocked, that's why we have targeted the poverty notes, so that we can hopefully unlock some opportunities out of those poverty areas.
Just in terms of food security, the sampling that will be done will inform the kind of soil that you have in the area. And working with the community and the chiefs in the area, you can identify areas of great agricultural potential.
Thank you, Chair. So the other one, I mean, if we... when you look at the Eastern Cape, for instance, beyond the other work that we have identified, is the soil erosion, the rate of soil erosion in the Eastern Cape area. We have not characterized that, and it has a direct bearing and it threatens food security in the long term. Now, we as geologists, understanding the geology and what informs this these changes in soil erosion and so on, it's important for us to put our geologists there so that they can begin to appreciate that. And the chiefs and people living in that part of the world can begin to anticipate what kind of changes that they will be prepared so that they can sustain their food security going forward. I think the issue of the contradiction between agriculture and mining, there's no reason why the two should not exist. I agree that in the past, the manner with which we have mined, particularly coal and other commodities, has not been assuring of it was sterilizing land utilization effectively. There's no reason why today, with the work that we do and others, cannot and should not be advising our mother shareholder on how to license in such a way that both agriculture and mining can coexist. And it is my personal belief that there's no reason why the two should not coexist. They do not have to be enemies. On the seismic networks and monitoring, I would also ask Babu Crane, I call him Monsu, Babu Christo Crane, Nomesha Lembe to assist me with that one. And I think on the derelict and ownerless mine, we have been verifying the database for quite some time, and we've got some data. What we have been able to do last year is to be able to access a system of the Department of Rural Development, the deeds register, that we are now beginning to trace the ownership of these mines. Currently, what we are doing is we are putting a separation between privately held land and state-held land. And our primary rehabilitation program is on state land, while we are applying our minds on the approach of apportioning of liability, as it were, on privately held land. Unless otherwise it is an area that is posing a major threat to society and necessitates some kind of a protection for communities living in the area. On the Beaufort West, which is, as you know, Honorable Ngozi, it's a rural town. There are about 44,000 people living there. In fact, it was timely, this discovery of water, because they were on the verge of completely running out of water. And so when the two boreholes were handed to the Beaufort West community, as we speak today, that entire community is solely dependent on these two boreholes that they have been provided. We've handed it over to the municipality to ensure that every single person obtains, they can do the distribution as it were, and it is their responsibility to do so. Had it not been for the opportune timing of us doing environmental baseline study, the municipality of Beaufort West would have had to go and obtain water from far distance and ship it in so that people can have access. And so it is one of those proud moments when you see that science can indeed make a real and meaningful difference to the people that are not in urban areas and so on and are privileged financially and otherwise. And if we can take it back to the ordinary people of this country, it makes all the difference in the world. And if we could, And as part of our work in every area that we'll go to, the integrated approach will also be looking at ground. And so we'll be testing in every area that we go, everything of development, including the groundwater. And we are hopeful that we'll be able to expand that provision to all the other areas where we go. I'll start with the CFO.
In fact, Mr. CEO, just to come in. At Beaufort West, when we went there, they were actually drilling their own boreholes, which were shallow boreholes, and therefore they were not intersecting any water. At the end of January, when we visited there, that weekend they didn't have water at all. And the fact that we were drilling and targeting structures, deep structures, and that's why you see the boreholes go to 169 meters. And that's where we got deep water, which was coming out very aggressively. And that assisted in that. They couldn't find water, shallow water, in any of the aquifers in that area.
Indeed, I do concur that we are at the beginning of the project. Obviously, you ramp it up as you go. But given the scarcity in terms of skills, the geological skills themselves, we ourselves are involved in creating the skills. We offer bursaries. We have interns and all and so forth. We need an incubation period of some sort that is funded. And without the funding, there isn't a day when you're going to say, give me $2 billion today, and you've got the necessary capacity to implement. So it has to be a gradual increase. We appreciate the initial 2-3%, but what we need is assurance of that. This, after you've trained these people, there will be money for them to do work going forward. That's the principle. The main thing is, They will obtain the skills. We will use what we've got now and what we're getting in the following years to to prepare ourselves for a proper funding where we expected. I mean, the request was $2 billion a year. So now we gradually go into that level, and that would be a 10-year project. So at that rate, one can imagine the longer the less fund you get per annum, the longer it takes for you to do the 10-year job. It's a simple
equation. Thank you very much. Perhaps let me start responding in relation to the Beaufort West water that we discovered. The 33 million liters are subject to a sustainable pumping rate that we have agreed with the municipality. So we have advise them not to pump more than 8 liters per second, so that the capacity of water that we say will provide for the just under 45,000 people in Beaufort West will be a sustainable supply to the municipality. So that's the thing that I just wanted to add to what Mr. Mabuza was saying. Okay, let me go back to the question of the target that we had set for ourselves in terms of covering the whole of South Africa in detailed mapping. We have given ourselves a target of a national coverage for the whole of South Africa in 150,000 scale mapping. It might seem like a very ambitious target, but perhaps it is, and we will do all that we can to ensure that the expanded mapping program is realized in tangible ways. One of the things that we have done, particularly starting this year, is identifying focus areas where we will start, and the map that you see on the screen, we show where we are starting as of this year. We also have done an audit of the completeness and the quality of all of the areas that we want to cover in terms of data existence. And from that, we can calculate the level of effort that is needed to complete or cover the objectives that we want to realize in those focus areas. The other thing that we are going to do to ensure that we reach that target that we had put out for ourselves of a national coverage over 10 years is to get book capacity. Because with the staff that we have now, we will not be able to reach that target. And so we need to get more skills, get more people in order for us to cover these areas in the time that we had set for ourselves. And of course, as time goes, there are new technologies that emerge that will hopefully assist us in terms of gathering data effectively and efficiently. We have new technologies of collecting data. These days we have PDAs or tablets, and those are some of the methods that we use in order for us to accelerate data collection and ultimately data delivery to the public. The next one that I will respond to is food security, identifying agricultural land and mining. Dr. Mabuza has already said a lot there. But I just wanted to share an experience we had when we did alluvial gravel mapping in the Northwest and in the Northern Cape. The miners there, I'm trying to demonstrate the point that it is possible for agriculture and mining to coexist. So what the miners do there, they mine the gravel and they get all the diamonds that they want. After they have done that, they close those holes and they plant from the same area where they had mined. So it is not, of course it depends on the type of commodity that is being mined there. In some places, the consequences of mining there bring things like acid mine drainage, and you don't want to plant in those areas. But for simple things like mining alluvial diamonds, that's one of the classic examples to show that it is possible for agriculture and mining to coexist without conflict. I think the others, I'll hand over to Mr. Crane to assist in responding.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll just go back to the mapping of currently 5%. And the objective to expand it, we must just see these things in context, that there's a definite sequence in doing geological mapping. And so we've got a data set which is on the brink of being published, but it's, which is to our benefit, there's quite a large amount of data that must just be digitized. And so that should ramp the amount of maps from traditional or historical mapping fairly quickly. Kind of a backlog on what the the sequence of data. What we typically you will do your airborne surveying, which can either be geophysics or remote sensing, and then you will do your geological mapping. So if we really expand this program, we will most probably saturate the South African contracting community from providing these services. But this, we need to do that first so that we can optimize the technology, as my colleague referred to. But that gives us also speed on the other hand once we have the data. We've got a very a good understanding at this stage of what we call our value chain, going from data, converting it into information, and eventually converting it into knowledge. That's on the mapping point. From the seismic and the prediction of seismic events, that's actually a very dangerous terrain, and I think we must be very careful on the perception we create on whether one can actually predict it. It depends on your time scale. The closer you get to the actual event, your ability to predict increases, but there's no way we can tell that in a week's time there's going to be whatever happening. So we must be careful on perception here. But on the other hand, we must venture into the predictive environment. And that will obviously require from combining our cluster networks, which are currently only concentrated on the gold mines. We would like to expand that to the future or existing platinum mines, but which will become deeper mines as we go forth. And to combine our networks with the mining networks, since like we've had experiences where if there's an event, the mining power supply will cut down, they are blacked out, and then our systems are running because we're running from different power systems. So there's a critical dependence on each other, and the Mine Health and Safety Council is the optimum medium or vehicle to get these two data sets in a formal mode of an agreement. We're very excited on the, as mentioned by the CEO, on the collaboration with the CSIR. I always say if we combine all the manpower, geology is still cleverer than us. So we need to get this collaboration going, and we're very excited on it. But I always alert that we must be very careful on throwing the word prediction informally to the left and to the right. But we are moving into the predictive environment at least. Just on the agricultural, also an expectation we must be careful of, that it will may require a different sampling density. Currently we're aiming for 150,000 map coverage, and for the agricultural application we may have to consider other density, sampling densities, which is also the case for geoengineering. But that will put this whole program into another dimension, because it just exponentially increases your amount of information and input you must on a data acquisition point of view. But that's something that must be considered on the impact we can expect or the critical need that exists. Thank you very much.
Maybe finally, I just wanted to add some more information in terms of the mapping. I think there are low-hanging fruit that we can get in terms of visiting all universities, because we've had students mapping areas, and we can put those maps together so that we start making our project quite more information coming in. Just on food security, I know that there are mining companies that are now changing their mining, and the areas where they are mining, they are providing those areas for agriculture. Exaro is one of those companies that is doing that, providing land and also providing training in terms of food security. And there are quite a few of such mining companies that do that. Thank you. Lastly, Honorable Chair, would like to thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, you may not have done enough. Mabu, I don't want to be pressured by time. You take this positive criticism. You did what I said you shouldn't do. You are telling us what you want us to hear that is nice and good. You are not telling us what we should look at. You know, what is that place? Dongerhoek. You made the presentation in Dongerhoek. I'm sure you remember now. And in that presentation, you placed the challenges on the conflict in policy within government that may make it very impossible to achieve the growth through the mapping of our mineral wealth. One example was the problem of what you call protected areas vis-a-vis mineral exploration, which is almost similar to what Honorable Mandela was asking on agriculture, but from a different angle. The second one was the potential growth of the Northern Cape as a mineral base vis-a-vis our commitment on international agreements, particularly the SKA project. Now, the reason I'm saying you come to this committee, we hear the nice things, but the reason we put you is not, it's us who must be smart enough to choose the language to use. It's for you who are doing research to tell us
on how the decisions that we take sometimes will be challenged, because we'll end up saying you are not doing your work, and only to find out it's because of the decisions that we've taken. So I'm just saying I'm worried that if that issue is doesn't reflect, we will ask you and you'll tell us we're only done 5%, when part of the problem of not doing enough is simply because of the potential conflict of legislation. So I'm just saying we're hoping on that part, because your duty amongst other things is to challenge us so that we go back and think about it. The second one, that's why I said here today, we're learning problems that we're learning concepts or discovered geothermal. Yeah? I know now, geothermal. You could see Honorable Lorema is already there. Again, it's almost something similar. Whether we talk about a question of an energy mix or a number of things that we do, for me the question will be, is there demand? I'm not going to question, I know there's no water, we've got a crisis of water, but I would fear, for instance, even on this one of water, where we pay you money. I know it's a social responsibility exercise. We pay you money, you end up focusing on water, not on minerals. And when we give you our budget, it's nice to talk about cooperative government, but it's beginning to some degree to worry me that I made that example to the department and the Mine Health and Safety Council to say, we give them money and then they do the job of environment. When the Department of Environment, when it devolved part of the responsibilities on environmental compliance, but there's no personnel and there's no money, so their budget still remains the same, but they would have cut a bit of their own responsibility and given it to another department, and it doesn't come true. I'm not saying we're in a competition, but I fear that in Beaufort West, instead of, or the entire area, instead of focusing on shale gas and other things, we'll end up focusing on water. You see? Because the more you give, the more the demand, because so shall I solve this for you? All what I'm trying to say, to some degree, I think there is a need to, not to shift it, but to make it a point. I raise this thing even on these things of the SLPs to say, sometimes you've got small business, you find that mining houses or mining companies, it's like it's perpetual that they must look after this. There is no system that says if we say there is a vegetable garden, then it's done, it's there, it must then be mentored or be taken where it belongs for sustainability purposes. So I'm not saying it's wrong what you are doing, but I'm saying down the line, let those people who should have discovered, you did your work very good, excellent. You didn't become jealous and say, no, it's not our duty to find water. You found water and so forth. But when it comes to sustain the project, so that tomorrow it doesn't say when it goes down, you are then reminded, hey, can you top up? You see? Now you top up from our own. You see? I'm just saying, because I'm not taking away the agreement even on how many liters and so forth that must be taken out. But I would love that that commitment be made mostly with the responsible department, so that if things one day they don't go correctly, they can take responsibility. But obviously you can't put that and not monitor whether it's being done. So I'm just saying on this question of the energy mix, and your geothermal. I know it might sound controversial. We on the other side there was a nuclear, then it disappeared. Now there were IPPs. I wouldn't know where do you fall with your geothermal, whether is it something, because you may produce something that is not being seen. I'm just making an example. Something that where it is located is not being seen as something that is required going forward in terms of the energy mix. The issue of human resources is good. Honorable Mandela says, in yourself, you confirm, you say, no, by June, everything will be fine. Maybe the starting point is that it's so good. The biggest problem with CGS that we'll continue to have is that I'm not sure whether where you are located in the right place. And I once complained about this thing that some of the things that you do, nithathimali kuthini and niyozenza izinto that zigcine ziyobenefitha abantu abantu yabona. I'm not saying it's a wrong thing again. So the challenge here is that your geological responsibilities goes beyond minerals. You see? So when you say, for an example, you wanted 2 billion rand, I assumed you wanted 2 billion rand to do geological mapping for minerals. And you see, that's that. We worried about the secondary and the tertiary, because there's no way in the equation of our planning. So I think the issue is that in as much as we may produce as much as you like, and have a very success story when it comes to your HR deliverables. The problem is that they might be extending the scope towards the tertiary and the secondary, not the primary. If we can just be given that that guarantee, you see, that no. Our focus is to build this. Not necessarily that, like I said, I don't mean that it is something that is wrong. And the strategic deployment. And I think this is what we might ask, cut across. See, I might have said it as a joke. We must see it having an impact. So that you don't have people, you build internal capacity, down the line they feel that they are suffocating. And then in the process of non-progression. Because it's one of the critical issues. Your succession plan, because you will end up fitting to an extent where there is no space, there is no need for me to be highly qualified, and for the next 10 years or so, I'm doing the same thing I was doing. So that skill or qualification attained may not necessarily be relevant on what I do. So just to have your HR strategy, amongst other things, encompasses a succession plan, I think it will be good to get that. The last thing, I don't know whether I was still treasure. You left it again. That's how it is. Well, I said we are dealing with APPs, your strength plan, as well as your budget. One of the things that we raised that we were worried, and you said you were attending, and again we shiile namhlanje, is the question of a backup system on your custodianship of the mineral. Because the last time I think again it was when you were at Dongerwo, where you said you were engaging with treasure, because we should be worried that there is no backup system. And if anything happens, and the last time we were there for an oversight other day, you scared us and said even yourselves where your building is,
It might be sitting, floating above water. Now, if an unfortunate things were to happen, it actually means the entire information might just be gone. How far, if we were to get clarity, how far are you with that? So I'm not saying, so the point though is that these are the things we have to understand so that the backup on the financial request and requirements, we can be, don't hide them. I'm not saying like you say from the, I think Shogland doing yesterday, and to a hidden. No, I'm just saying this one, the gaps to me were those things that we should not miss, because if we miss them now, and you raise them in the midst of it, unfortunately you will tell you that unfortunately it's not what was raised. So I think to me those were the, more or less the gaps, if one way to say, or I'm adding to your report or your presentation on what I think is the case. Those are the things that we want, so that we know what is in demand and we know what is it that we can stand up and motivate for, but also we know what is it that it may not be on the immediate for now. So I thought that those to me are the issues I could raise.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll answer them in reverse. ICT, and only because I brought this slide, you recall when the CFO was presenting the financials. So Treasury has been kind enough to allocate us an amount of 90 million rand in the current financial year, so that, amongst other things, we can sort out our ICT in the organization. We are going a step further that I think in the past, ICT did not feature eminently in the organization. And so we have not had a fairly senior ICT person within the CTS, notwithstanding that we are a knowledge organization. And I have truly, and I appreciate the initiative of the board, who said to me that we must create the position of a CIO and make sure that we fill it like yesterday. We'll be interviewing on Monday, this coming Monday, for the CIO. And so, already we are placing quite eminently the ICT management within the organization, balancing that with these immediate resources that we have, so that we can get the necessary infrastructure and curate this 150 plus years of geological information. If we had fire today, all of that would have dissipated. And so it is absolutely critical that we move with speed, and I have the full backing of the board in this regard. I think on the issues of HR, we could not agree more with you. In our strategic planning earlier this year, we had emphasized on the HR, a comprehensive HR plan for the organization being developed. In fact, we were supported again by the board for the reasons that you have outlined. We have had some of our young scientists who had been sitting in those positions for quite some time, for reasons that are perhaps understandable given the model of CGS at the time and the context at that time. And the board had supported us and to initially isolate the lower level scientists, but then instructed us to come with a comprehensive policy of career pathing within the organization. So our HR team is working flat out on this
career pathing policy which will take to the board, I think in July this year. Chair, not every day I run out of words, Chair. I think we, one of our mandates is to advise the state. And I think it is our responsibility to do our job and advise the state. For instance, with geothermal. Geothermal is renewable, sustainable supply of energy. It could possibly be the most cost-effective renewable energy yet. Could. But we've got to do our part, because we as geologists are pathfinders. It doesn't mean that we are in the space of energy, but geology integrates all of these things. So you can't say, I mean, geology for minerals and for minerals only. Of course, primarily, mineral development is important, but while we're in a particular area doing what we do, we can't then look the other way and say, because we are an entity of the DMR, let us close our eyes to this possible reality of the other things. So ours is to then do this geological task of ours and then advise our authority, because it's in our mandate. Our mandate says we are the custodian of geoscientific knowledge in the country broadly. So to the extent that this geoscientific knowledge could benefit the state and the people of South Africa, and you're quite right, the energy, the Department of Energy necessarily would not be considering geothermal in the context of South Africa without the geologists triggering. So it is the duty of the geologists in this regard to say we have a potential. It's not going to happen in the next 2 years or 3 years or whatever. If it were to happen, let's do it properly, let's define it, let's delineate it, let's quantify it, and then we give it to you. Then you make choices as to whether you want this to be part of the energy mix, does it make economic sense, and all other kinds of senses. So these are some of those secondary and tertiary outcomes that form part of our geoscientific mandate. On these conflicting policies, we are very concerned. I mean, when we talk about identifying mineralizing systems, can you imagine if a mineralizing system is identified? For us, we're not precluded from collecting the data. We can collect it anyway, every inch of the land. But once you have collected it, you have defined it as a wonderful mineral system and half the country is protected. These are the contradictions, I suppose, that you as our leaders would have to realize, that some of the legislation that you process in Parliament has unintended consequences of contradictions, which contradictions may necessarily have to be looked at very carefully. I think there may be a very useful exercise that Parliament must do and look at the contradicting legislation to the extent that is it helping us to achieve what we are set out to achieve as a country without compromising the environmental stewardship and other important international protocols and other things that we have entered into. At least if we know what is contradictory, what is the extent of contradiction, and how that contradiction can be managed, it will be a worthy exercise for us within government to do that exercise. Otherwise, all of these things that are happening in isolation may end up nowhere at the end of the day. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I say, Uthi, Nkosi Mandela, ibisifuna ukuthi Your primary task is minerals, not water.
But basically, Chair, when you drill for minerals, you end up intersecting water. So that's something that secondary that comes up. And in fact, in what Mr. Mabuza said in terms of looking for minerals, there's this term called serendipity. You go and look for something and you find something else that's great and that will benefit probably the community and the country.
He's gonna want that serendipity. I'm trying to avoid that. Because when Mabuza said they are going all over in the, he mentioned the Eastern Cape, we became interested in the Eastern Cape, and then he said, combining your Karoo exercise and your geomapping of the Eastern Cape, he then introduced Umpash. So two things, he expects that you must go and do it in Umvezo with hope that you will discover water, if no minerals. So I'm trying to help you, because I agree. Okay, can we get Chair and Mabuza? You know the policy is simple, because you all presenting. Let not punish us. Even if you leave, there must be a substantial number that remains, because we may have to take decisions, and by that time you say no, you are not there. So I'm just doing it in a favorable way, because tomorrow we may have to put you last, and then you start to realize that you are talking alone on the chairs. You see? So, okay, like Dube did today. So he's still here. Okay. Next, in the meantime, we are taking a 5 minute break. Meantime, we'll come in those up. Let's take 5 minutes.